You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and on Wednesday this week, RNIB will be hosting the first ever See the Future Differently Summit at County Hall in London. Joining us now to tell us a little bit more about it is Keith Valentine. Thank you so much for joining us, Keith.
Hi there.
So can you tell us a little bit about what the See the Future Differently Summit is?
So, I mean, we all of us in different ways in our lives have been through a really tough time in the last couple of years, and the RNIB is moving extensively to try and change and improve the systems that are impacting blind and visually impaired people. Inevitably, that's coloured by the impact of the pandemic on everyday life. So we felt that it was time for us to bring all of the movers and shakers together, if you like, from different elements of the sectors that serve blind and visually impaired people to take stock of where we're up to. And again, referencing the pandemic, that's had multiple effects, but also to start, as the title of the summit says, to see the future differently. So to look at what we can do together to make the changes and improvements so desperately needed by blind and visually impaired people in Britain. It's an important summit, I think, in the sense that it does bring together the, you know, the true leaders and the true influencers and shapers of policy and approaches in the country from multiples of different activity, from what goes on in clinics when people get diagnosed through to when the impact of sight loss on people's mental health and well-being, through to the key sort of policy and scientific questions about how prevention, cures and treatments get to people in clinics to mitigate sight loss itself. So it's a really exciting thing to do. I think it's the first thing certainly that I've been to with a large number of people in a room for some time, and we've got a large number of people joining us virtually as well. So we're expecting it to be something very dynamic. We're expecting there to be actions arising from the event that we'll take forward into the next year. And we're expecting it to be a foundational point in not just the RNIB's work, but the RNIB's work as a leading organisation amongst multiples of partners, from the health sector, from the voluntary sector, from government, etc., etc. So, yeah, a very exciting point of time and something we think is critical for us to start to re-energise the work to make life better for blind and visually impaired people.
It's so important, isn't it, like you say, to get people from all different sectors to join in this conversation. What are some of the key topics that you'll be focusing on through the day?
So there are three principal areas of work, and one of the impact of being COVID safe is that we've had to sort of space things out. So there are three definite physically separate work streams that we're going through. The first of these is under the banner of no diagnosis without support, or diagnosis with support, to put it on the positive sense, which is to focus in on that question of what happens to people at the point where they are informed that they will either not recover sight or that they're going to lose their sight, and to have a focus on all of the different players at that point of diagnosis to make sure that people get an appropriate and timely offer of support. So really, really pleased to be drawing leaders from NHS England and from Parliament and also from the voluntary sector into that space to talk about how we pull together to make sure that the work that, for example, our eye clinic liaison officers do in the clinic can be there for everyone that passes through a sight loss clinic. The second of the three strands that we're doing is going to focus on mental health and wellbeing, but in particular, this idea of how people that are impacted by sight loss and where it may affect their mental health and wellbeing are understood and referred by the clinical system. And I use an example where if you had a physical injury, you know, I mean, God forbid, but say that someone were to lose a limb, there are existing kind of automatic referral processes in place for people to get the rehabilitation support and the advice and talking therapies that they may want. And that's not so much in place for blind and visually impaired people. It does exist within some hospitals, and you know, we know that Moorfields run a very good counselling service, but it's not ubiquitous, it's not everywhere in the system. So we've brought the Royal Colleges together, Royal College of GPs, Royal College of Medicine, Royal College of Ophthalmology and other players to talk about how we might work to put in place a more systematic approach to that. And we're expecting breakthroughs in the conversation there in terms of the way forward. The final one is kind of new in a sense for the RNIB, but not new in the sense for the sector, which is about the medical research element of the work that's done and those kind of initiatives that have made, for example, cataract operations. I mean, we forget that cataracts used to be a major cause of long-term sight loss for people, and the science got us to the point where through treatment they could be cured. So we're looking at this from the perspective of how the voluntary sector and the scientific community and government could work together to make sure that all of those people impacted by sight loss have got the best fighting chance of getting the kind of treatments that have made it possible to manage certain strands of AMD or glaucoma, as I said, cataracts and those sorts of things. That's exciting. And we're really, really proud to have involved Professor John Marshall, who's a leading figure in eye research in the UK, and also was instrumental in things like the invention of laser eye surgery, which impacts, you know, millions of people in the population. So those three things we think sit very well, making sure that we're focusing professional attention on how we see the future differently at the point of diagnosis, focusing on those impacts on mental health and wellbeing for people to make sure the systems are in place for them to get appropriate referrals, and to look at the role we can all play as a community to make sure that prevention, cures and treatments are getting to the public in a timely fashion, and that the innovation in the science is pushing forward as well. So I guess people like me with inherited retinal disease could be in reaching distance of treatments and cures to mitigate the loss of sight. So it's pretty exciting stuff, and we've got the key people there in the room with us to help us figure out a way forward.
It is very exciting. Three incredibly important topics there. And like you say, all the people who are, you know, the key players will be in the room together, which makes such a difference after we've all been separate and doing things over Teams and things like that. What would be the goal then? What are you aiming to get out of the summit?
So, I mean, the point you make there, just to loop back, physically being in the room together is going to be, I think, a mixed feeling for people, because whilst being really excited about it, we need to be careful also with COVID. So I think, yeah, it's a significant indication of the commitment people are showing that they're willing to do it and working that way. In terms of what we get out of it, obviously, I don't want to preempt decisions that may be made in the process of the summit. It's very much a summit and not a conference. So in the sense that a lot of the sessions are going to be run with direct discussions between decision makers about what the next steps would be and what the opportunities are to make change. So for in the general sense, what we're looking for on each of those three streams and the coming together of leaders in each of those three streams is some definite decisions about the way forward to change, where improvements are possible, where there are perhaps new things that we need to explore and develop together, or where there are some things that really just need that extra push to get over the line. So I don't want to go too far ahead because I don't want to preempt the decisions those people will make. But what we would expect to come from this is a clear inventory of decisions about changes that can be made. And we're seeing it very much as a launch pad for work that will follow as well after that. So, you know, if you take, for example, on the no diagnosis without support work, the work that will come after this will be directly with NHS England and those bodies from the devolved nations starting to look at how the voluntary sector and the NHS sector work together to make sure that no one gets told they're going to go blind without being told where the help is that they might need to cope with that. As I say, I wish I could give you a list of what those definite decisions actually are, but it wouldn't be appropriate because we've still got to have the conversations.
Absolutely. Well, it's an exciting time anyway, and I'm sure that you'll get some great conversations, and moving forward, it'll be a great platform, like you say, to propel us into sort of the next amount of time, really. Keith, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Great talking to you.